Well, today we're going to listen to Mr. Armstrong give a sermon that was given back in December 1977 called A Positive Message. And at that particular time, it was Mr. Ted Armstrong was still part of the work, although as you listen to the message, you'll find that certain of the things that were being said certainly applied to the leadership of the work at that time. And it was probably the beginning of the Get Back on Track years, if you want to really highlight a sermon that began it. This one is probably it. It's quite a fairly short sermon. It's only just over an hour, and therefore it gives me a fairish amount of time for a news analysis. But it is interesting that Mr. Armstrong brings out in it the fact that we should be looking forward to the kingdom of God, and it's a positive message. It's the gospel of the kingdom is the good news of the kingdom. And so often we can get absolutely bogged down in today's world, and certainly giving a news analysis, it's very difficult to analyze the news without having a certain amount of doom and gloom, and particularly this week that's just passed has been quite interesting, to say the least. I mean, this one is from Tuesday, March the 18th, that's this last Tuesday. Financial crisis is the worst for decades. Billions wiped off shares, value of sterling plunges, another bank may be hit, and so on. And then we come to one here that is Thursday, March the 20th. A hunt for a £100 million bank robber, where the Bank of England steps in after a rogue trader's attacked Britain's biggest mortgage lender. And it's interesting that on that same paper, this is the front of the Daily Telegraph, on the same front page, as you're looking at headlines like this, which is the problems that you see within the financial world, just down below it is another headline that says 30 teenagers every week are having repeat abortions. So again, whether in fact people tie in one with another, this is what you so often do not find within the news, is that they will almost, you'll see one headline, and then you turn over a couple of pages, you'll see another headline, and they are so blatantly linked together when you understand the spiritual implication of things, whereas many times these people don't. They see a vague link, but they don't see the absolutely vital link that is there. This one's from Friday, that's yesterday, revealed the dirty tricks of the rogue traders in the city. What in fact was going on, we'll comment a little bit more about that in a little while. And the rogue traders were actually attacking a conglomerate of the Halifax, I think it is. It's HBOS, is the kind of initials that they use. But inside that particular paper on yesterday, it says HBOS mugging shows that crime pays. It says Britain's biggest mortgage lender, HBOS, falls victim to larceny on the grand scale when dealers spread malicious rumours about his liquidity and then bet on the falling share price. One speculator is thought to have made as much as £100 million, that's $200 million, which would make this the biggest single act of theft in British criminal history. It is illegal what was done, in other words, to spread a rumour and then go ahead and use that rumour to go ahead and enrich yourself. It says, for theft it is. The response of the city's regulator, the Financial Services Authority, it issues a statement saying it will, quote, not tolerate, unquote, such criminal activity. And it goes on, it says, the FSA appears to focus its energies on cracking down hard on the small fry, while the really big fish act with impunity. No one in the city expects those behind Wednesday's scam to be identified, let alone brought to justice. And yet this is not some abstract victimless crime. Most people have mortgages or pensions or are directly affected by such criminal activity. And there is now an overwhelming case for a review of how the city is policed. And the 1997 tripartite arrangement, which transfers regulation oversight from the Bank of England to the FSA, while the Treasury remains watching brief, and so on it goes. But it is interesting that when you do look at that financial crisis, there is certainly you almost wonder why is it going in the direction it is. I mean, there's a certain fear of really allowing these banks to go to the wall. I mean, look what happened when we look at Northern Rock. Northern Rock has been and is propped up to the tune of multiple billions, isn't it? So, and in addition to that, you've got this Bear Stearns in America. There's also been propped up Fed actually moved in there and allowed money to be available to prop that particular bank up. But, you know, what are they doing it for? And there's various articles that you'll read, one from the Daily Mail, which is a bit more sensational as a newspaper. It says, so will the fat cat masters of the universe who've got us into this mess suffer? You bet they won't, but we will. And it is true that, you know, we that have perhaps some insurance or something like this, or a pension that we've been paying into over a series of years, will suffer because of the problems that have happened in the city. But the people that are actually at the top are not going to actually suffer if they continually are bailing out. And you say, well, why? What is the problem? Why are they doing this? Well, there's an article in the kind of a commentary section. This was from Wednesday's. So it was commenting on this particular issue. And it says, the actual headline is, sooner bank bailouts than the 1930s revisited. So in other words, they're contrasting what happened in the 1930s with what's happening today, and the response that happened in the 1930s to the response that actually is taking place today. And it says, put a clothes peg on your nose. The moral stench of bailouts for the uber-rich will be sickening. None of us wants to pay a farthing to rescue the bankers and assorted debt pimps who got us into this financial mess. And that is the general feeling of the public today. It says, and actually doing so exposed our societies to such harm. Most would rather relish the delicious moments as the bailiff's gravel falls on their Gulf Stream fours. In other words, let them go. You know, they deserve it. They deserve all they get. And yet we must forbear. It was such sentiments that turned the 1930s recession into a slump. Liquidationists prevailed. They insisted with Puritan zeal, or malice, that speculators should be driven to the wall amid a cathartic purge of the roaring 20s. That's actually what happened. In other words, they said, right, they got themselves in a mess, therefore they've got it coming to them. And so they, and as it goes on, it says, among them were top bureaucrats in the US Federal Reserve and some of Europe's central banks. The consequence was the Brüning deflation in Germany, which ushered in the Nazi democracies and democracies snapped across half of Europe. That was the result of the 30s. The 30s had the problem, same kind of problems we've got today, but the reaction was different, and the reaction was such that let them go. And this is why, when we're looking at what's happening today, this is why they're propping up these. This is why we had the problem with Bear Stearns and also with Northern Rock. It says, if it had not been for the towering figure of Franklin Roosevelt, America may have been splintered into a bedlam of prairie populists, Colgan fascists, and Huey Long extremism. We should be thankful that the man now heading the U.S. Federal Reserve, which is Ben Bernanke, spent his early career immersed in the detail of that catastrophe. That's what he did, I believe, his doctorate or master's or whatever it was on. He said he had written books showing how the credit crunch can set off a vicious downward spiral and do so with lightning speed. You don't mess around in such circumstances. So what we're looking at is a person who's in charge of the Federal Reserve has done their homework based on the 1930s crash. And because of that, this is the reaction that you're seeing within the markets today. The question, however, is nobody, and I mean nobody, has any idea whether this reaction is the right one. Could it be that it's an even worse disaster? Because look what will happen to the currency. You start bailing out these the banks and the financial institutions. And as was said, I mean, it said that I read an article one time, you can either support the companies or you can support the dollar. But you cannot support both. It is impossible. In other words, if you get a whole chunk of money and you move it into the market and you prop up a bank that in fact has lost all that money, you've got to create the money from somewhere, and you print it. You print that, therefore you got inflation, therefore the value of the currency goes down, and you have hyperinflation. Now, that happened in Nazi Germany, and we're looking at, you know, it's happening today down at Zimbabwe. And yet you're looking in America, could it happen within America? Well, who knows? I mean, anybody that would know something like that would make an awful lot of money on it. You see, when you're looking at the problems within the city, there are far more problems within the city than meets the average person's eye. And it is a case that the city reflects the moral state of the nations. The moral state of the nations is reflected in their dealings one with another, and dealings financially one with another. There's an article here. This was from the Telegraph of March the 19th, Wednesday. That's a week ago Wednesday. It says, last Wednesday. It says, the city looks to the heavens for answers. And you think, oh, well, that's good, looking to God for answers. Well, not quite exactly. The subhead is, can astrology really help predict the direction of the financial markets? And he says, Christian Skinner blinks at the screen of a computer and takes another slurp of coffee. It's 7:30 in the morning, and she's preparing for a crucial meeting with the chief executive of a high and mighty fashion chain. Apart from the black cat dozing on her lap, the only clue to Skinner's occupation as an astrologer is a copy of an ephemeris, I think it is, a table of predicted positions of celestial bodies that lies open at a page marked Mercury, March the 25th. Quote, the financial crisis has ensured that I'm busier than ever, says Skinner. People in the city need to know what's just around the corner, and I can help with that. Skinner is one of a growing, albeit secretive, network of astrologers who work for seemingly conservative British institutions such as high street banks, city investment funds, and retailers. Desperate to avoid financial meltdown and to spot fashions and consumer trends before they start, these institutions have turned to the planets to divine the future. Most academics distrust astrology and regard it as mumbo-jumbo, she says. The thing is, it works. Nobody's sure how it works, but it does, and most of my clients are business people who are very canny. If they didn't work for them, then why would they use it? One of Skinner's clients is Judith Levy, a chief executive of the high and mighty retail chain, and she says, I'm fairly pragmatic, said Levy. I will only spend money on the astrologer if the decision I have to take is very important, the kind of decision that will cost me a lot of money if I get it wrong. Now, that is happening within the city. If you just turn with me over to Isaiah chapter 2 and just remind ourselves of the prophecy for this time that we find ourselves in today regarding Israel, and notice how this fits, you know, like a glove. Isaiah chapter 2, it says over in verse 6, it says, therefore, you have forsaken your people, the house of Jacob. Now, when they're dealing with Israel, he'll call them Israel, which is, you know, I'm not sure what Israel actually means. Blessed of God, I think it is, isn't it? But Jacob was the Israel before conversion. So it says, the house of Jacob, because they be replenished from the east and are soothsayers like the Philistines. That is a problem within our society. And they please themselves in the children of strangers. It says, their land also is full of silver and gold. There's no end of their treasures. The land's full of horses. Now, the end of their chariots. You don't have to drive on the roads to see that. Their land is also full of idols, and they worship the wonder works of their own hands and that which their own fingers have made. And the mean man bows down, and the great man humbles himself. Therefore, do not forgive them. Now, the thing is that that particular scripture, referring to our people today, referring to the financial situation that we find in the world today, certainly when you're looking at what happens within the city, you find it contrasted in the beginning of chapter 2 with what in fact is coming. It says, a word that Isaiah the son of Amos saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. Now, Judah and Jerusalem, again, is where the Holy of Holies was. And you're looking at the church as the obvious spiritual counterpart. And it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Eternal's house shall be established in the top of the mountains, exalted above the hills, and all nations will flow to it. Now, we're not looking at just Israel physically. We're looking at Zion. We're looking at Judah and Jerusalem. We're looking at the ones, basically, we're looking at God's kingdom. We're looking at the spirit kingdom of the children of God, spiritual Israel. And many people shall go and say, come, and let us go to the mountain of the Eternal, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths, for out of Zion, and that's where the Temple Mount is, that's where the Holy of Holies was, shall go forth the law, and the word of the Eternal from Jerusalem, and he'll judge among all the people, nations, and he'll rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares, their spear into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. O house of Jacob, come you and let us walk in the light of the Eternal. And then it goes into this passage about what they are doing. So we see this contrast between the kingdom that's coming and what is actually happening today within the actual city itself. Now, what we're looking at, as far as the rumor mill, this rumor mill mafia that I mentioned to you about before, it says that these banksters, this is a commentary, this is from Friday, that's yesterday, a commentary from the Telegraph. It says, these banksters, as one of our readers branded them, in other words, rather than gangsters, the banksters, they profit from a system of trash and cash. They trash the shares with unfounded tales, then they cash in by cheating gullible investors. And it works because traders are allowed to sell stock they don't own as long as they buy enough in time for future delivery. So in other words, they're selling, because this is a bear market, the market, they're wanting the price to fall, they go ahead and they say, right, we'll go ahead and sell you this stock at such and such a price. They then spread the rumor, and the rumor then drags the price down, and they're selling stock that they don't actually own. And they then go ahead and buy it, so they sell it at, say, £10 a share to you, and then the price, they spread the rumor, and the price gets dragged down to maybe £5 a share, and they buy what they've sold to you at £5 a share, making a £5 profit, in addition to their commission. He says, it's not illegal to short a stock, i.e. sell shares that you do not have. Several reputable hedge funds made millions by shorting both Northern Rock and Bear Stearns. The law is broken, however, when the rumor mill creates malicious falsehoods with the aim of driving down prices. Now, the thing is, when you are shorting a stock, now, if you say that you're going to go ahead and buy a stock on somebody's behalf, that's one thing, but they don't do that. They sell stock that they don't have. That, in my book, is a lie. That's a lie. The problem is the lie. The problem is selling something that you don't actually own. That's the problem. That's the real difficulty. That's what is causing this problem. And yet, then, in every single report that I've gone ahead and read, I've seen absolutely no even hint, not a suggestion of any kind, that should be made illegal. And yet, to me, I mean, maybe I'm being simple. Maybe there's something that Mr. Munro can tell me later that, you've got to go ahead and short stock. But as far as I'm concerned, you're selling something that you don't own, that you don't have. How can you sell something that you don't actually possess? So, again, looking in the future, every indication is that we're looking to a time when people that sell something will actually sell something that they actually own. And even if it's going to be a service, even if it's going to be a service to buy something later, then you're selling the service. You're not selling stock that you don't actually have. But you see the problems in the city in many other areas. You can see it even in this particular article. This is from Tuesday, March the 18th. Again, all this from this past week. It says, after 800 years, police to patrol dreaming spires. Now, you can't go back 800 years in somewhere like America. I mean, America wasn't, when was Columbus sailed the ocean? 1630-something or other, too, wasn't it? So 800 years going back, you're looking at the University of Oxford. It says, for the first time in Oxford University's 800-year history, police officers are to patrol the college quadrangles. The first time in their history of 800 years' worth of history, the police are going to have to move in there. Thames Valley Police will supply 4 police community support offices and a cost of £120,000 to issue, with the powers to issue fixed penalty fines for bad behaviour. They can also detain suspects, confiscate alcohol, protect students and property. And the move is an admission by the university that the boorish behaviour of some of its students has created an extra burden on the city's hard-pressed police force. So what we're looking at is a society where the elite have been, you know, gone to Oxford and Cambridge, basically the two primary universities, and now they're having to patrol those universities. Before they had a the law was enforced by something called the Bulldogs, which are universities' bowler-hatted force created by an act of parliament. In fact, that didn't work, or doesn't work, it's been disbanded, and they're having to bring the police in. But from there come the leaders. That's where the leaders of society come from. And when we're looking at society, we're not just looking at the society itself, you're looking also at the leaders that are coming out of the same society. The same families that are producing the problems are the same families that are producing the leaders, because the families are the families. I know that's a broad sweeping statement. You can say, oh, well, the families of the leaders are different from the families of the plebiscite. When you look at the leaders, I mean, here's another one. So this is coming from the Telegraph, and it says, we can't prosecute MPs over their expenses, say the police. The secretive system of parliamentary expenses is so arcane that it's effectively impossible to prosecute any MP for breaching the rules, police said last night. Scotland Yard said that it wouldn't investigate the £50,000 payments by Derek Conway, MP, to his son Freddie, following legal advice that a successful prosecution would be impossible because of the system's lack of transparency or any checks and balances. So again, we're looking at a certain leadership that is there. Another indication of that same leadership is the real cost of living is twice as much as the official figures. So the official figures are a certain figure, about 2%, the real 2-point-something percent, and the real cost is about 5-point-something percent. It is interesting, I saw another article, and I don't think I've got it here, maybe I didn't put it down, but another article I was reading was talking about student loans, and the student loan percentage is calculated on the higher percent, not the lower percent. They've left it on the higher percent, but they've shoved all the price of living index onto the lower percentage. And what the way they do that basically is things like the major things that people buy, like food and clothing and you know, rent and rates and mortgages and that kind of thing that they've got to pay every single week. That's one group of costs. Other things that they buy only infrequently, like televisions and white goods, you know, washing machines and dishwashers and so on, therefore, that's another group of items. It depends on what percentage of these things that they put together to make the price index. And so what they've done is they just lump the whole lot together, and white goods, obviously, with the electronics in there, are being forced down by technology. So it hides and masks the rate of inflation. And they're doing it deliberately. They're doing that deliberately. But for the student loans that they're then for recouping because they go ahead and have given the student loans rather than grants as they used to have within the UK, they are calculating on an interest rate on a price index where the white goods have been stripped away and what is left is going up at 5.5 point something, 6 point whatever it is percent. You can even see it in the planning legislation as well. There's an article here within the Telegraph today that talks about a couple who bought a derelict market garden, I think it was, of some description. And it says financially things are tight, and they converted across into an organic holding. They converted this old market garden, an old farm area, into a organic holding. So financially things are tight, there's no debate, it's definitely tough existence in terms of the amount of money you can expect to earn from a small holding, Sega says. Physically it's full on, there's not much time for lolling about and admiring the view, and Jacqueline worries about she endlessly bottles and stews, and Simon endlessly digs and plants, but they are providing their 21st century children with some rather retro role models, so there are anxieties. But on the upside, Sega says, that in comparison to the business of getting the planners to accept their proposals for turning a few empty fields into a small organic farm, the matter of running the small holding is simplicity itself. Nothing has been more difficult, nothing has demanded more time, money, effort, and bloody-mindedness than getting that official thumbs up. In other words, the regulation that they had to battle in order to just get through the planning regulations, which are, again, jobs for the boys, nothing seemed to compared to that. And the problem is that the real problem is that family life is really breaking down. That's where these, an awful lot of these problems is actually coming from. Family life is breaking down. It says here, it says, decline of marriage is destroying our pupils. This is from the Daily Mail of Wednesday, this last Wednesday. It says, the decline of marriage is leading to widespread underachievement and indiscipline in schools. Teachers warned yesterday. Children with chaotic home lives turn up at school too troubled to learn, wrecking their prospects of success in exams, they said. Growing numbers are being brought up in splintered families by mothers with children by different fathers, leading to behavioural and mental health problems, including eating disorders and suicidal thoughts, in a teachers' conference heard. And this is a major, major problem that we find here in Britain today, and it's across the Western world. It's a major problem. You've got mental health because children are being brought up in areas which, you know, they should never, ever have to face. Turn over to Isaiah 54. Isaiah 54. Be aware that one of the things that we've got to get to grips with within the church is this subject. We've got to make sure that if you look in Isaiah 54, it says, verse 11, O you afflicted, tossed to a tempest, and not comforted, behold, I will lay your stones with fair colours, and lay your foundations with sapphires, and I'll make your windows of agates, and your gates of carbuncles, and all your borders of pleasant stones. And all your children shall be taught of the Eternal, and the result of that is great shall be the peace of your children. In righteousness shall you be established, you'll be far from oppression, for you'll not fear, and from terror, for it'll not come near you. And so here we see the peace of the children in the future, and that is going to come from the church, from Zion. And that is so vitally necessary. And when we see these kind of headlines, it should make us understand that, no, this is something that we really do need to make sure we get to grips with ourselves. Here's another one. This is from today's paper again. It says, poor school discipline caused by parents spoiling children. Now, I heard a section on the radio this morning as we were kind of coming to a debate between two women. One was a head teacher, and the other one was the head of a parent organization. And the head teacher was saying that the problem is, as what we're saying here, poor school discipline caused by parents spoiling children. Let me read what it says. It says, classroom discipline is deteriorating because overindulgent parents are spoiling their children, according to a report published today. Primary school pupils are increasingly difficult to teach as they throw tantrums during lessons if they fail to get their own way, the Cambridge University study says. Their problematic behaviour is being fuelled by growing exposure to television and computers and video games, as well as spending too long in baby bouncers and strapped into cots, which damages children's development, it claims. Now, why? Why are they doing that? You see, on one side there's this debate. These two ladies, one was a head teacher, the other who'd been in the job for 40 years. And she's saying, look, she has, over the 40 years, noticed this. Children are coming into school, and they're coming into school ill-equipped for school. In other words, they basically, as it says here, the discipline is deteriorating in the classroom. They can't, you know, they can't control the children anymore. And yet the other lady, who was the parent group lady, she was saying it is not all down to the parents. She says when you're looking at the government push to get women back into a job market, therefore, what's happening is these children are actually going out into nursery schools, and they're going into nursery schools at age just a few months old. And we know we worked with people in the past, which this was the case, where she literally dropped the child off at nursery school at just a few months old and then come into work. And I know that one time we were talking, and she was ordering a new car at one time, and then talking about how the child, you know, as far as being sick is concerned, the child, you know, she was pleased to have the child in this nursery school. So she was working there, earning money in order to have a new car, and the child was the one that was suffering. So this was being brought out by the parent group and saying, look, we are being forced, we are being pushed in this direction by a government that is trying to get women back to work. And there are other areas as well, other things that we need to understand, and that is that when you're looking at the children's behaviour, food also is making a difference in today's society, because the food is depleted and it does have an effect on children's behaviour. It has an effect on rats, it has an effect on prisoners that they've done experiments with. In addition, in this same paper, I think, yes, it's today's paper, it says, just inside, this is on page 5, the other one was on the front page, I think that was today's, wasn't it? Let's have a look. Yes, that was today's paper, that was on the front page. Inside, unrelated to the other, it says, public school nurse is sacked after son reports her for smacking his brother. And it goes on, it says, a senior nurse at a leading public school has been sacked after smacking her 10-year-old son at home. Now, just to explain to the American audience or anybody else, public school means private school over here. The reason for that is that it was the only one, apart, there were two types of school 800 years ago. One was public school, where the public would go to, and the other was the monastic school, where it was a clerical school. Therefore, the public school was is the one that somebody would pay for, they would pay for it, as opposed to the monastic. Today, now you've got free education, the public school is the private school, and the other one is the free education. I know it's very confusing, but that's the history behind it. So a senior nurse at a leading public school has been sacked after smacking a 10-year-old son at home. Susan Pope, 45, was investigated by the police, who decided she had done nothing wrong after she hit the boy on his bottom. But the £25,000-a-year boarding school said that because social service remained involved in the case, it could damage the school's reputation, and it fired her for alleged gross misconduct, just for spanking a child. Mrs. Pope, who has three children, is taking the school to an industrial tribunal. He says the row is likely to reopen the debate about smacking children, and Mrs. Pope said she hit her son on the bottom after he was abusive and repeatedly swore at her. Her eldest son, who was 15, called the police because he was, you know, angry with what was going on. There was some kind of problem there. And the police got in there and they took a DNA sample, they took fingerprints, all the rest of it from both her and her husband, as I understand it. And the whole thing was ridiculous. And people do not make the connection between something like that and what's on the front of the page that says poor discipline in school caused by parents spoiling children. It's also caused by stupid governmental legislation that bans smacking. What needs to be happening in many cases, it actually says within scripture, it says a rod for the back of a fool. And it's not just a back, it's the backside of a fool, for the bottom of a fool. And that needs to be done. It should be done by the government. But not only do they not do their job themselves, but neither will they go ahead and allow the job to be done. And then they wonder why we've got the problems that we have today. And what we can see is what is the solution to it all? Well, we go down. Here is Tuesday's paper. It says CCTV in classroom spies on the teachers, says the union. Schools are becoming Orwellian societies where CCTV cameras in classrooms monitor pupil behaviour and staff performance, teachers were warned today. They're relying on Big Brother-style tactics to crack down on assaults on staff and fellow children, it is claimed. So that's the solution. And what it is, it's a spiritual solution that is needed. It is the family life. The family needs to be, that's the crucible. That's where the next generation comes from. That's where the next leaders come from. And the family life has got to go ahead and be put back on track. And they don't know what the track is. They have no idea what the track is. Why? Because they've thrown out this book. The book that actually gave a certain understanding in days gone by. I was absolutely astounded when I read this next article. Because there's been a case in the UK of a girl that has gone missing. Basically, she was, again, CCTV in the state, in the railway station, I think it was, took a picture of her, or I think it was actually the swimming pool, took a picture of her, she came out, and then she just disappeared off the face of the estate that she worked, that she lived on. And then, all of a sudden, she was found, and the police were found with an uncle, well, not an uncle, it was the uncle of the stepfather that her mother was living with. And that is very significant, because in the paper it says complex family tree, because the police were criticised for not going checking on this particular individual. But the thing is, when you understand the family structure, you can understand why the police had a certain length of time before they finally got to this particular uncle. It says complex family tree held up the police. The complex extended network of Sharon Matthews' family was one of the key reasons officers took as long as they did to find her, police were disclosed. In addition to her mother's many relatives, her stepfather also had a myriad of family members who all needed to be investigated. Shannon's mother, Karen, 32 years old, has had 7 children by 5 different fathers. And each had to be checked out. She didn't register the father of her first child, Tony, 11, who was born when she was 20. Sharon's father is Leon Rose, who is also the father of her older brother, Ian, 10, who lives with him, not with her. The couple split up before Shannon was 2, and he now lives with a new partner in Huddersfield. So now you've got another partner as well, and all their relatives. Karen's next relationship was with Paul Hooker, the father of Daniel, 7, who lives with his father. So again, spreading out. That relationship lasted less than 2 years, and Karen then took up with William Marshall, the father of Kelly, 6, who lives with him. Again, not with her. The identity of the father of Cameron, 5, remains a mystery because he was not registered at birth. Her current relationship is with Craig Mahan, 22, with whom she has another child, Courtney, 2. Mr. Meehan's mother was one of 9 brothers and sisters, creating numerous further potential routes of investigation. So you see how this absolute spider's net rat's nest, really, when you're looking at the various lines of inquiry that you've got to go through. And he goes on. Officers were trawling through Shannon's complex family tree when they received information that led them to the flat of Michael Donovan, Mr. Meehan's uncle. So that was the reason why it took so long. And it is, I don't know what's happened on the case. I'm not going to go ahead and follow it. But another case at the same time also came to light, and that was sex, drink and drugs, the Goya murder girl's diary revelation. This girl was 15 years old, left by herself, by herself. Now, the mother said, no, I left him with somebody. But this mother was also, I believe, a biker or some kind of traveller herself. And this 15-year-old was, well, sleeping around, drinks, drugs, the lot. We've got a picture of here. And the various entries in her diary, it says, went to see a mate's last time, and then I'm off to India for 6 months. I'm getting excited. I went to a party last night, got drunk, stoned, and was tripping on mushies. Now, mushies are magic mushrooms over here. At the full moon party, I met this guy, Julio. He was pretty messed up, like I had taken a pill and drunk a lot of vodka. I don't remember that much, but it took like 2 weeks before me and Julio were hanging out regularly. That's the next one. I think Julio is just using me. He says he loves me, but I don't think so. But he treats me like I'm only with him for his money or sex. I want to go home, but I'm stuck. This is a 15-year-old girl. And final entry in a diary. I really, really don't know what to do. I wish something big would happen to make my decision final. And then almost after that, she was killed. And whether it's murder or not, we're not sure. But the family life is breaking down. And another one, I mean, I think I've got time just to read you this other one. It says, children's end-of-term party turns into orgy in Village Square. This, again, was from today's paper. And the orgy was the result. And what is the solution to this? They contact school, contacts the parents, and says, advise your child to have the morning after pill. Because they can't remember whether or not to go ahead and had any precautions taken. This was a school, children's end-of-term party. The society is coming apart at the seams. And what we're looking at, the financial chaos, is a reflection of the society. It is not in isolation. It is the way in which people deal with one another. They deal with one another for what they can get. It's the way of give, the way of get. In days gone by, they did have a respect for this book. That's gone. That's your problem. And that's the problem. And this is all the ones I've just read to you, as far as I know, have all come from this past week. Just 1 week. And various days. And yet, it fills a news analysis, extended news analysis, without any problem. And there's several scriptures I've got here, which I've never got to. But, you know, it does give a general flavor about what's going on.